Have you finished your personal statement yet? Now's the perfect time to get it professionally reviewed by a medical school HQ expert advisor. We have former directors of admissions, admissions officers, and the like on our small team of amazing people. They have the inside knowledge from reading thousands and thousands and thousands, tens, if not 100,000 personal statements going through the process and setting up the process for their whole committee. They know exactly what medical schools look for and the common red flags that can get your entire application thrown out. Take advantage of our flash sale right now, going through May 6th, up to 6,000 characters reviewed for just $150. That's a $75 discount on our regular price. Go to editmyps.com. Again, that's editmyps.com. The Pre-Med Years, episode number 530. Hello, and welcome to The Pre-Med Years, where we believe that collaboration, not competition, is key to your success. I'm your host, Dr. Ryan Gray, and in this podcast, we share with you stories, encouragement, and information that you need to know to help guide you on your path to becoming a physician. Welcome to The Pre-Med Years. Thank you so much for joining me today. I have a great guest today who's very open on his application about having autism. He's going to share why he was told not to include that stuff and why he did anyway. And it ultimately led to success. Before we jump in, though, I want to talk about the MCAT Minute brought to you by Blueprint MCAT. Planning your work is so important. When you are in the middle of your MCAT prep, everything feels crazy. It's all daunting. You're stressed out about the time that you have, the material that you have to cover, your test date looming, your applications if you're working on them. One of the best ways to reduce that stress is to make a plan. Use Blueprint MCAT's free study planner tool over at blueprintmcat.com today to create a study plan for you specifically based on your timeline, based on your other responsibilities and work engagements and everything else. The Blueprint MCAT study plan tool will create the perfect personalized study plan for you. Again, that's blueprintmcat.com. Let's go ahead and jump into our episode today and say hello to Fox. Fox, welcome to the Pre-Med Years. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Dr. Gray.
I'm excited to chat with you. When did you first realize you wanted to be a physician?
So it was less of an epiphany and more of a slowly accumulating thing over my childhood and adolescence. Mm-hmm. Being diagnosed with a moderate form of autism at 4, I immediately started receiving early intervention, ABA, CBT, speech pathologists, and occupational therapists, what have you. And over time, seeing my neurologist and seeing my primary care physician and seeing what they did for me and being engrossed in that sort of setting as a patient really sparked my interest in wanting to be on the other side and giving back someday.
Yeah, that's awesome. So early diagnosis of autism, and I think how I found you was on Reddit, where you were like, hey, I got into med school and I openly talked about my autism in my applications. Let's skip forward a little bit and talk about that process of applying to medical school, being very open about your autism and what you've overcome or what you've just lived with autism and applying to medical school. Did anyone give you advice not to talk about that kind of stuff?
It's funny you say that because virtually everybody I talked to told me not to disclose my autism. Mm-hmm.
And you decided to, why?
Because it's just such an integral aspect of who I am as a person. To withhold it would be to not talk about who I am. It would just be a completely different person.
Yeah, it's hard. And my general stance is, if you're going to talk about something that may be a potential red flag, and it is core to why you want to be a physician, which in our opinion is the whole goal of the personal statement, then you're probably going to have to talk about it. Now, the question then comes down to, how do you talk about it if you are going to talk about it? So you decide, hey, look, this is who I am. This is my authentic self. Take it or leave it. But there's a difference potentially between airing all of your dirty laundry and touching upon the fact that you've had autism since you were four. Which side did you more skew towards?
So I, instead of talking about my disorder as if I accomplished things in despite of it, I talked about how I accomplished what I did because of it, how my autism gave me a unique perspective and skill set that made me an invaluable asset to medical schools and their student body and so forth.
Interesting. Okay. And how did you frame those things? For someone else, just give more context to that, right? So for someone else out there who is on the spectrum, if that's an okay term to use, they may be sitting here going, well, I don't want to talk about it. Or if I do talk about it, I'm not sure how to talk about it. So obviously you've gotten into medical school. Congratulations. I'll spoil that surprise. Although I think I mentioned it earlier. But the question for someone listening to this would be like, well, what was that line for you? And then what was that angle that you took? So how did you frame those conversations?
So I primarily focused on my anecdotal experiences gained from my extracurricular activities. Mm-hmm. Stuff like being a direct care worker for people on the spectrum, or being an ER technician and having patients who are on the spectrum. And talking about how, being on the spectrum, I'm able to empathize with these neurodiverse patients, and I'm able to help calm them and make them feel heard and welcomed and understood in a way that someone who isn't neurotypical would not necessarily immediately know how to approach the situation.
Okay. So similar to just a basic kind of analogy is someone who may have this amazing leadership experience because they were president of their fraternity, and they're going to say, hey, this leadership experience is going to help me be a leader. You're saying, hey, because of my neurodiversity, I'm able to interact with other neurodiverse patients in a way that maybe a neurotypical person wouldn't. And so that's a skill set that I'm bringing to the class.
Yes, absolutely.
Interesting. Let's talk about potentially the fact that neurodiversity, although I think is becoming more and more common because it's being diagnosed and we're finding more people that are neurodiverse, a lot of your patients aren't going to be neurodiverse. Did you have a concern of like, okay, great, you can take care of the neurodiverse patients, but what about all of the other patients?
You know, I did have a lot of self-doubt. I think that was externally instilled because there are some preconceived notions about people on the spectrum and their capacity for empathy.
Yep.
Or being able to work, you know, in a team, amongst other things. But when I started at my first hospital volunteering in the emergency department, I quickly realized that I was perfectly capable of empathizing with my patients and working in a team. I just needed to throw myself in that environment.
Mm. Okay. Do you think, and this may sound like a weird question, do you think it's a skill that you practice, or do you think that kind of preconceived notion of like, oh, people on the spectrum can't empathize, they don't look people in the eye, all of that normal stereotypical stuff, do you think that's just like you can't paint with a broad stroke like that, and you're out here like I'm an empathetic person? It's just like, yes, I'm on the spectrum and I'm empathetic.
So I have about 10 years of sociodynamic skills classes that I had to go through. Wow. And I went to countless, you know, summer and overnight camps for people on the spectrum, and a lot of people that I know in my community are on the spectrum. And something that I've noticed is that pretty much all of us are very empathetic people. It's just that we have trouble figuring out how to properly place that empathy.
Interesting. Okay. So yeah, it sounds like you've been privileged, if that's the right word, to have a lot of coaching, training, education, therapy around your diagnosis. Do you think that's made a big difference in your success to where you've gotten to today?
I think it has, because not everyone is able to receive those services on an equivalent level. And that's one of the biggest things when it comes to moderate and mild autism is early intervention.
Yeah, it's huge. It's definitely huge. So let's rewind a little bit and talk about the journey. So you go to college. Were you pre-med right away when you were in college?
No. So I actually went to a state school before my local school that I graduated from. I went there for 2 years, but I lacked the emotional intelligence to go to my classes and actually do well. So I ultimately racked up 11 withdrawals over 3 semesters. Wow. And ended up dropping out of my first state college entirely.
Okay. I mean, 11 withdrawals is better than 11 Fs. So at least you were smart enough to do that, which I talked to lots of people who kind of forget to do that withdrawal part, and then they have Fs all over their transcript. So you go to this state school. You said you weren't pre-med. What was your idea when you were going to college? What were you planning on doing?
So I wanted to be a physician at my first college. It's okay. Just that I had no idea as to how the process even works. Mm-hmm. I didn't even know that I had to do extracurriculars or shadow a physician or what have you.
Yeah. So you were the typical clueless pre-med of like, I want to be a doctor. I guess I apply and get in like college. You just apply and get in, right? And so you go off to college and you struggle some. Do you think that transition to college from a neurodiversity standpoint is what kind of made you struggle a little bit more? Do you think it was just a very typical first time away from home, normal kind of college jitter stuff?
I would say both. Mm-hmm. I'd say like any other incoming freshman, you get that homesickness and that newfound independence. You don't exactly know what to do with yourself. But for me, and for a lot of other neurodiverse people that I know, it's exacerbated by, when you're in high school, you have an individualized education plan if you have a disorder. And it focused primarily on social skills more than academic. I actually was held back from like Algebra 1 in middle school when I got an A, and I ended up not taking calculus my senior year of college because it snowballs like that. And I was entering freshman level calculus in college, never seeing it before. And mm-hmm. that definitely put me at a disadvantage to my neurotypical peers.
Yeah. When it came to going and exploring the extracurriculars, once you figured out that was something you had to do, transferring schools, all that fun stuff, who along the way gave you the most motivation that you, as someone with this neurodiversity, can accomplish anything you want?
I would definitely say the leader of the volunteer group at my local college I graduated from. Mm-hmm. My college had this thing where you could join tens of different volunteer groups, and it would place you in a different field, in a different position. And I chose the one for my local emergency department to volunteer there. And the leader of it was this junior pre-med who was kind of a quiet guy and didn't really talk a lot about the process. But at the same time, I was someone who asked a lot of questions, and he seemed to actually appreciate that. And we had some good moments, like heart-to-heart moments about how it all works. And just seeing him go through it, someone 3 years ahead of me, just fully engrossed in the process of applying to medical school. As much as it was daunting, it was oddly empowering and motivating at the same time.
Yeah. Did you have any neurodiverse peers that were going through this one step ahead of you that you could lean on for support or just for guidance?
No, unfortunately, I don't know anyone else who's openly neurodiverse and applying.
That was the key word. I'm glad you said it because I was going to bring it up, right? That open is the key word, right? And it's so weird. It almost reminds me of like the LGBT community, like the first openly gay football player. I'm like, well, I'm sure there's plenty more that aren't openly gay that are in the league. But it's very interesting that you caught that, right? Of like, I'm the only one out here that's kind of screaming from the rooftops. Does that scare you that you're so open about kind of the neurodiversity? Does it have to be scary? And again, I think this is it's a tough conversation for me, who's, I think, neurotypical. I'm sure we all have a little neurodiversity in us. But the fact that we in the neurotypical world kind of consider neurodiversity as like, ooh, that's, we don't want to talk about that, right? It's almost still out in the shadows, and you're out here going like, hey, come on in. There's nothing to see here. We're just hanging out like you are.
I would say it's scary insofar that there's not really someone else in my position that I can seek guidance from.
Yeah.
So when I share things on different social media platforms and get criticism for it, you know, I'm just like, oh, well, that sucks. I guess I was wrong in that instance. But at the same time, I mean, someone has to do it. I mean, I don't think that I'm just some guy, right? I'm nobody special. It just feels right to me. That's all. It just feels like it's what I'm supposed to be doing with myself.
Yeah. There is, it's random. I didn't think about this before our call, but then I was like, oh, there's a TV show out there that portrays a neurodiverse physician on TV. Do you think that's good or bad for students like yourself?
I think that it's a double-edged sword. It's always great to bring more representation in media. Mm-hmm. In a nuanced, if you look at it like from a nuanced lens, the show portrays him as autistic, but what allows him to excel as a surgeon is his savant syndrome. Mm. That's primary, but it's portrayed as secondary, which is fine. I mean, it's better that the general public has more awareness and knowledge of autism, but it's always going to be a double-edged sword, you know?
Yeah. When you were out and on your interviews, how many interviews did you end up getting this cycle?
I had three interviews.
Three interviews. How did those interviews go? Do you feel, and obviously you only have your experiences, but do you feel like interviewers potentially treated you differently? Did they poke and prod about being on the spectrum? What was that like for you?
I would say for the most part, it wasn't really made a deal out of. They all went by really quickly just because of how nervous I was. Yep. And one of them was a MMI. So okay, there wasn't really a chance for that to be explored sufficiently. Yep. But for the other two, I did make an effort to center my conversation around how I did all this and I also am neurodiverse. And they didn't seem as if they didn't appreciate it, but of course, you know, I'm coming from an applicant's perspective, so I can only assume so much.
Yeah. What was the most, if you got one, what was the most straightforward question about your neurodiversity?
I'm pretty sure I remember, I forget if it was PCOM or if it was Jefferson, but I specifically remember asking like, or being asked, like, what about my autism makes me like different than, or not what about my autism, but like, why does that make me unique? Like, how is that going to be any different than anyone else in terms of succeeding in medical school and providing competent care for patients and working in a team with your fellow physicians and mid-levels and nurses?
Yeah. When you look forward to your time in medical school, there's lots of studying, lots of learning, and that's just general student stuff. But there's a lot of clinical experiences. There's interacting with the attendings that are out there. And medicine is still, unfortunately, known to be a pretty conservative world. We still have lots of crusty old white guys running the show in lots of places. And you are going to be, not in a derogatory term, but the oddball out, right? You're going to be the one that is different from a neurodiversity standpoint than other people. How do you prepare for that? To prepare for potentially, and I think this is the same conversation potentially for people of color and other underrepresented minorities who are potentially going into these predominantly white institutions and saying, hey, like, I'm the oddball out here. I stand out compared to the crowd. How do you prepare for that?
You know what? I honestly don't know, but I will tell you that I've been working in emergency department as a technician for the past year, and previously I was an EMT for the past 2 years. And every institution, every department that I was a part of, I did end up finding kind of my niche, mm-hmm. Or my kind of spot in the group. I've found that as long as I, you know, am able to do the work that I'm assigned and to do it well, people really don't care if I am a little weird. that's what I've experienced thus far. It might be different once I hit my rotations, or my residency. Mm-hmm. But I feel pretty comfortable as of now with meshing with groups of people.
That's awesome. I'm glad you mentioned that, right? This weirdness. And it sounds like, I believe the right term is like masking, right? For neurodiverse people to try to play not neurotypical, right? You mask. And you can correct me if that term is wrong. But it sounds like potentially you have figured out your spot in this world on the spectrum as a neurodiverse individual, as a pre-med student, as a future medical student, as a future physician. It doesn't sound like you mask much, if at all.
And that's because I actually mask very well.
Okay.
It's one of those, it's weird. It's like, you can't tell if someone's masking, if they're masking well, and you can tell if they're masking, if they're not masking well. Because the whole point of masking is it's sort of a compensation of one's inability to naturally be or acting in accordance with what's expected of a neurotypical person.
Yeah.
So it's a conscious effort. I'm constantly retrieving what I've learned from my sociodynamic classes and having to analyze people's faces, and it can be quite exhausting sometimes. But I mean, it's also exhausting for just someone who is introverted, or even someone who is a people person and they were at their friend's house for 6 hours talking about the sports. I don't really see it as something that is ultimately detrimental. It's, you know, more like a muscle that you work, and it gets better with time.
100%. Yeah, I love how you presented it in that way, because I was just thinking, as you were saying, right, you as someone who is neurodiverse, going through kind of your classes and training and education to help you mask, I guess. I mean, and myself, who was raised in the family that I was raised in, and taught skills and not taught skills, and going to therapy. I have a therapist and I go to therapy and I learn skills just like you as a neurodiverse person are learning skills to navigate life and to meet these social norms. So it, at the end of the day, it's interesting how you frame it that way. And then I'm like, oh yeah, it's just like me going to therapy. It's the same thing. And interacting with my spouse and my kids and the rest of society in a way that's expected, that maybe I wasn't raised with some of those skills. And so I go to therapy for them. It's interesting.
Yeah, because what it does is it harkens to this idea that there is a subjectivity to neurotypicalness. Of course, there is things such as the maladaptive nature and the pathophysiology of these disorders. But at the same time, as you said, like, you can have obsessive compulsive tendencies but not have obsessive compulsive disorder. You can be anxious but not have general anxiety disorder.
Yep. Yeah.
Everyone has a component of some sort of neurodiverse feature.
We're all on the spectrum.
In a way, yes. It's just realizing that it's trying to shed light into it and remove this taboo that we're all pretending to take seriously, because at the end of the day, there really is no taboo. We're all neurodiverse in some shape or form, and society just needs to learn to better accommodate all of our quirks, if that's, if you will put it that way.
Yeah. You mean we need to be more accepting of diversity in all forms? Shocker, right? <Yeah. laughs> that's how we get along more. It's amazing. For the neurotypical student, or those who maybe assume they're neurotypical student, listening to this, right? Your future classmates, your future colleagues, what do you want them to take away from this conversation to better support their neurodiverse classmates, colleagues, you in the future?
Don't be afraid to ask questions. Myself, as well as some other neurodiverse people that I know, are more than happy to answer your questions about neurodiversity. It's kind of, because of the fact that it is a disorder, it's not appropriate to just go up to someone and say, hey, what medical conditions do you have? But at the same time, schools such as the one I was accepted to, they're hosting neurodiverse sessions and we're having these conversations. And, what better way than to just do, newly minted medical students are so good at asking questions because that's what they did for the past 4 years to get to where they are.
Yep.
So just keep asking questions. Ask me about my autism. Ask me about, how I empathize and how I read faces and body language and how I think about social norms, because it might surprise you what my answer is.
Yeah. Yeah, that's amazing. I don't talk about it much. I have a kid with a disability, and we get lots of staring and lots of like inquisitive looks, but nobody really asks questions. And I would love, like, just come up and ask, like, hey, why do you use crutches like that? Or why do you have a scooter? Why do you like these questions that is like, just be kind, be inquisitive, don't be judgmental, and just ask questions to learn. And I like how you framed it, like medical students for the last 4 years are asking questions. And so, yeah, it's just an extension of that. So that's awesome. When you were looking at schools, right, you mentioned the school that you were accepted to is hosting these events for neurodiversity. How did you find schools where you thought you would be both accepted and supported?
So I probably should have done that. What I actually did is what I would not recommend, and I just I applied to all the schools in my vicinity.
Okay.
I didn't really look that much into fit. And the reason why is because I was sort of forced to cast a wide net Because I have fairly low stats. So I didn't want to be a choosing beggar, essentially.
Interesting. Okay. So you focused on vicinity. Did you focus on vicinity for support, family support, and just your community? What was the
Well,
reason for
yes.
focusing on the vicinity that you're in?
That primarily is the reason, is
Okay.
because of my extracurricular activities. I have such strong ties to my city, that it would be very much so preferable to stay in said city and continue with my working relationships in the area,
Okay. Yeah, that's awesome. Okay.
which fortunately I was able to accomplish.
Yeah. When you received your acceptance, who's the first person you told?
I actually told my brother. I was supposed to tell my mom, but it was just, he called me just right after I got the acceptance. And I just said to him, "Hey, I need to tell you something. Don't tell mom I told you, but I got accepted in the medical school." And it was, I didn't even believe the words that were coming out of my mouth. It was so surreal. I was waiting for past their recommended deadline to hear back. And I was just, it was the day before Christmas Eve. And I knew that if I didn't hear back right then and there, it would be 2 more weeks to hear back. And all those things. And it culminated into this, "Congratulations, you've been accepted to, PCOM." And I just knew that the next 4 years of my life were going to be this new, amazing, but terrifying journey.
Yeah. That's awesome. That's awesome. When you look ahead, again, we talked about kind of the preparations for what you're about to face. Are you continuing with some of these skills classes? Again, I don't know the right terminology for your therapies that you're going to or have had in the past. Do you continue those? Do you what do you do to make sure that you continue to have the skills necessary, both from just a general standpoint and from a future physician standpoint?
So I pretty much have finished my social dynamic skills classes back in high school, because that
Okay.
was primarily stuff like understanding social conventions and, mores and folklores and what have you.
Yeah.
A lot of sociology stuff, really. Now what it is, it's developing my interprofessional relationships as a future physician. And in my working relationship with my colleagues and my patients and with myself. So it's definitely much more of a, it's much less of a learning how to do things that neurotypical people can do, and more of a focusing more on self actualization and internalization and self-reflection.
Interesting. For those out there listening to this right now who are on the spectrum, who have whatever neurodiversity they have, they're dealing with imposter syndrome, like you mentioned earlier. What words of wisdom do you have for them as they go through this process?
I've said it before and I'll say it again. You do not need to disclose. As we've discussed, there's still a taboo, and it very well could hurt your application. And this is just my opinion, but in my opinion, it's probably the best thing that you can do for neurodiversity, for yourself, for your neurodiverse peers, and for the future of our role in medicine. And I would encourage you to do so. And if you do choose to do so, you have my full endorsement, and you are more than welcome to constantly ask me questions about how to do it. Because, man, I wish I had someone that I could have asked a year ago.
All right, so there you have it. Again, Fox talking about his journey to medical school, being super open about his autism. For all of you out there, it's a very common question. Should I talk about this? Should I explain this? Should I expose myself? And on the application, the only advice that I can give you is you have to be true to yourself. And yes, potentially understanding that there may be some ramifications on the back end. We have a couple other great episodes coming up with other students who were in similar predicaments. Hope you enjoyed this episode. Don't forget to subscribe so you get all of our amazing episodes for free. Just subscribe in Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Hope you have a great week. We'll see you next time here on The Pre-Med Years.
This is MedEd Media.